Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer günstig und natürlich mit dem Aldi-Tiefpreisversprechen. Zum Beispiel knackiges Gemüse, saftiges Obst, frische Backwaren. Kurz gesagt, mehr Frische für alle. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote zum Tiefpreis in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
This episode of Watching the Throne is brought to you by you, the listener. We've chosen to keep the show ad-free and only ask for something small in return. Please head to iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. Those reviews really help with our exposure. And if you'd like to make a small monetary contribution, head to patreon.com/kanyepodcast, where you can donate increments of as small as $1 per month. Thank you so much, and stay wavy.
Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep your love. I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne, a lyrical analysis of Kanye West. My name is Chris Lambert, and today we have a story with Robin Petering. Robin, say hey and introduce yourself to everyone.
Hi, this is Robin. My official title is I'm a social scientist and social work researcher. I live in Los Angeles. And I spend the majority of my professional life trying to understand homelessness in America, and specifically homelessness experienced by young people, so under the age of 25. And really from a research perspective, I'm a community-based researcher, as well as, you know, I'm an advocate for ending homelessness. But I'm also just a long time Kanye, like, enthusiast, fan, you know, wannabe expert in that as well. So,
when did your Kanye enthusiasm first get going?
that's a really, really great question, and something I was thinking about recently with this call impending. So I think I've been a hip hop music fan since as early as possible. It's something that's really, really, you know, embedded in my identity, or just like, I love hip hop. It's just my favorite thing ever. And I always have. You know, one of the things I also have, like, no personal musical talent, which, so the way that I really enjoy and kind of connect with music is really on a much more, like, nerdy kind of, it almost, like, reflects in, like, what I do in my actual professional life. I'm, like, I like to just dissect and really just get deep with things and understand, like, all the little intricacies of the music that I end up, that I enjoy. And I've always, like, really considered myself a fan of hip hop, and really coming down to, like, I say I'm, like, a beats over rhymes person. I'm really a nerd about, like, music production and hip hop production. And that's something that I've always just loved to geek out on. And I think that really, that is one of the reasons why my enthusiasm for Kanye, like, began. And because I think his origins as being just an amazing hip hop producer before becoming, you know, this rapper and public figure that he is that we know now. That's one of the reasons why he really stuck out to me early on. I think it is, what's interesting now is actually, like, later in life, kind of getting, like, going deeper into I've had a period of time where I'm like, oh, I'm just like only going to listen to Kanye. And I'm kind of got more, went back to a lot of the things that he produced and just having moments of like, oh, I didn't realize this was like understanding that like those songs, some of the stuff that I was listening to and some of my favorite stuff, like when I was 11 and 12, like was a Kanye beat. And, like H to the Izzo was one of my favorite. It was for sure one of my favorite songs when I was like 11 or 12. I remember it was like my phone ring for on my little Nokia, you know? and not having like that concept of what that really meant until or later. So I don't know. And then I think it was really after I've actually seen him live now. It's like 6 times potentially.
So jealous.
Yeah. And the first time I saw him, I remember it was in San Diego. I'm from San Diego and I went to one of those like kind of street festival, or it was called San Diego Street Scene. Just one of those like bigger like block party things. And he was, you know, with a bunch of artists. And I think like the main headliner was like, I remember like Snoop Dogg and like Wu-Tang and Sean Paul were all big headliners, co-liners, and like other, like it wasn't all hip hop. There were some other groups, and I remember seeing him and Kanye was on it, and I saw the whole set, but I kind of remember not liking it because I thought it was just like he spent literally 10 to 15 minutes, like maybe more, just playing tracks that weren't his. And he was that he produced. So it was just like really fresh out of like him making, like coming on, you know, like his independent, like rapper, scene. And so he just spent 15 minutes being like, this is a song that I did. I bet you didn't know. Like, and it was, I thought it was so annoying. And I'm just like, wow, this is so arrogant. Which is so funny too. Cause in like thinking back, you're like, oh God, that's just like, so like, exactly all the things that we know of him. It's just like so on brand. But yeah, and then I think what really, he's always like, you know, been present, and his music was so you know, popular at that period of time and on the radio, and he had like all that real like radio level like success after that. And I remember the next time I saw him was he was on the Glow in the Dark tour, and it just so happened that like I like accidentally like luckily got like front row center tickets to the show. My a friend's mom, she had bought tickets like through like a third party, like through like a StubHub or SeatGeek or whatever. And the third party messed up her order. And as a compensation, they were like, here's front row center tickets. And it was just like right there. And this was, I was living in Portland at the time. And so it was at the Rose Garden. So like the big stadium, in town. And that show was like, it was so incredible. The difference between that initial show and the one in the Glow in the Dark tour was really like, I mean, it was a 180, I guess. And my experience was really, really different. So for that Glow in the Dark tour, I don't know, did you see that? Or I don't know if you're familiar with it or like anything that happened. Rihanna was opening. I remember that.
Yeah. I know about the tour. I didn't get to go. I was sadly not wavy at that point. I was just kind of like, oh, Kanye has some cool songs, but it's...
Yeah. So, like, I think that's kind of where... That was my intro to wavy, was this show, because what was wild was, you know, again, I was, like, a huge hip-hop fan, and at the time, it was... I was kind of, like... you know, I was seeing, I was young. That was like, you know, my early 20s, like 22. So I was going to a lot of shows and really involved in like the local music scene and stuff in Portland and friends that were in the scene. So, but this show was like different than any hip hop show I've ever seen before. Because he like, I remember being amazed because he was the only person on stage for the hour and a half show. And for, I thought for like a hip hop, you know, I was so used to seeing like everyone up on stage with their like posse and like, you know, like their best friend, like tagging along with them. And I don't know, you know, just like really kind of unorganized type of group show. Even if it was, you know, one person that was being, that was billed. And that was really, really, really different. He also like the whole show was like, it was, there was like a story, right, embedded within it. And so his actual set list and the songs that he played, like followed this plot line, which also was totally different than any hip hop show I've ever seen. Like, I remember kind of like reflecting, like after leaving, that there were certain, you know, some of his like big singles that he just didn't do during that show. And like, because it didn't necessarily fit into that, the plot line that was happening along the whole hour and a half set. And I forget the plot line, like, I don't even really know what it was, but it was something about like, he was traveling to outer space and I don't know, that something about going to a different planet and like meeting an alien woman type of thing. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And I remember there was like a pit orchestra that he talked to, but it was just, there was like an epic set as well. And it was just like, he put on this like show, you know, and it was really incredible. And again, like just like something totally different, which of course, like my nerdy brain, like hip hop geek, like loved. And the other thing too, that happened at that show, was, and it was, I mean, I'm trying to think of, it must've been like 2007, 2008 potentially. He had, and you know, this is glow in the dark era, like he was already kind of being, you know, like was pretty divisive, like publicly, right? So mm-hmm. A lot of people, that was like right, you know, I don't know if that was probably like after George Bush hates black people type of thing, and people, you know, his public persona. And I think that his mother, like, I think Donda had passed away before this too. And I remember he went on like a rant, like not a full rant, but like a good like minute and a half or 2 minutes where he was just like, I remember him saying, he was like, I have mental problems. Like I have mental issues that I deal with. And like, this is a very real thing for me. And I think that was really, really, like, I really loved that. One thing that I really love about Kanye, and I think a reason why I connect and I respect him, is his, like, he's an asshole sometimes, but he's relatively pretty open for a public figure about, you know, his struggles with like mental health and the way that he, like, we're living his coping mechanism sometimes. And, he doesn't hide it, I think, the way that maybe other people do or other public figures do. And, there's something really raw about it. And I think people can really connect to that and empathize with that. It's also just like super out of the context of just being like a public persona, like how, you know, rare and uncommon that would be just in like hip hop and just in general. Yeah. Of talking about your mental health. Like I always talk about how wild it is that Kanye like raps about like being on Lexapro. Like, like, you know, that is just the, part of my profession too, is like a social worker. And like just the stigma of mental health, the stigma of mental health, like medication is very, very real. So I kind of point him out as an example of someone that talks about it and that, you know, to continue, we need to like broadly as a society, like continue to talk about these things. But yeah, that happened at that show and that was like, you know what? Like, he's got a lot of shit going on and, he goes through like just as many, like, just like the rest of us has like breakdowns and it manifests in, on a much more like much more public scale than any of our breakdowns do. And like, I don't know, I just really respected that. And that show, yeah. So that was incredible. And then in the same year, I think I was working for a music promotion company. I was basically like a farm team. So of this company called Cornerstone. I don't know. And they're like music promotion. And they work closely with the Fader. And they're kind of like basically share an office in New York, or at the time they did. And I loved like the Fader, of course, like was just, I loved that. And was just the epitome of cool in my mind back then, and still is, like the Fader's fantastic. But as part of that, I got the opportunity to go to Austin and South by Southwest that same year.
Yeah.
I probably saw like the Glow in the Dark tour in like in October, September, like in the fall. And then within like 6 months after that, I went to Austin and the Fader Four. I don't know if for anyone who's been there, if you've been there, it's just like a really cool space that they build out. And then they have shows, you know, or artists play like for 3 days, like short sets. But, and like, you know, it's all free to get into, but people, you know, sign up for waiting lists and whatnot. And you have your wristband and all those things. And it's like very heavily like sponsored by Levi's and Budweiser and whatnot. But it's really usually like one of the cooler places to be when you're there. At least back in those days,
still to today, people get excited about Fader Four.
Yeah, Fader 4 is really cool. That was, I mean, this is just like one of the cooler things. And do fun things like this. But in that year too, like, I think like it was still really early. I think the Fader was really some of the only places you could see like hip hop. It wasn't exclusively hip hop for sure, but they were like heavily had a lot of hip hop on their lineup. And cause I at the time too, I remember I was like a huge, really into electronic music scene. And there was like that, I remember going that year and it's just Fader, like South By was really rock and indie, is really predominantly that in live bands, but, Fader was really the space where you went to see maybe a little bit of other types of genres. And it was really before, now it's really heavily like electronic music is like embedded with it, like so widespread. But back then it was kind of rare. But yeah. And so I was working and like, we were just helping run the whole thing. And I did things from, you know, putting wristbands on people to, like, I can't even remember now. It was all kind of a blur, but it was fantastic. And there was a team of us, like 20 of us, farm team, young people from all over the country that were working this. And it was like so great. But Kanye was the headliner for the second day. And it was, I remember it was like good music was new. So he was like announcing or like kind of premiering it at that point. And this was the event that he was doing it at, and everyone, I can't even remember if he was secret guest, if he was like actually on, cause usually they keep like the headliners kind of secret. I think he might've been a secret guest for like everyone else. And so we maybe knew like the morning of, and we're unloading all his stuff. Like, it was so cool. I think I have a photo somewhere back of just, you know, like all the, you know, his set and equipment coming in, and we were like, oh my God, this is crazy. And I remember really remember that one of my friends that I was working with, like as everything was building up in the night, we're like, oh my God, Kanye's coming in, all this stuff. And we're all getting like assigned things to do. And my friend had to go and pick up Big Sean from the airport, and like, no one knew, like Big Sean, like, we were like, what's Big Sean? Who's Big Sean? And like, had no idea. And then my friend comes back and we're like, yeah, so like, is he big? Like, what's the deal? He's like, no, he's not that big. We're like, okay. And yeah. And so at the end of the night, he did this whole like good music thing. And so I think Kid Cudi was there. Big Sean was there. Common came out. Erykah Badu came out and sang The Light with Common, which was like so great. And I'm blanking on other. Yeah, it was just Big Sean, Cudi, and Common were kind of like the big folks that were on stage with them. But it was this huge, like, you know, a bunch of people on stage. It was also like a really, I mean, I think there were maybe like 300 to 500 people. It was all outdoors. Kanye was wearing like Levi's and a white t-shirt. I remember that really well. And it was incredible. And I think that's really wild. Like in the same year, I saw these two performances by him that were like polar opposites. And I'll never forget either of those, really. And then since then, I got to see Watch the Throne. And I went to Pablo twice when I was here in LA. And then I'll totally, like, my biggest regret, and I'll never do it again, is I missed the Yeezus tour. And Robin. I just remember at the time, I'm like, oh, it's too much money. And like, I don't know. And I just didn't go. And it was such, like, to date, I'm like, oh, so sad that I missed it. Because I think it was like pretty recent after he came around for Watch the Throne. So I was like, oh, this is a lot. But and then what's awesome too, here in LA, he came and did the two nights of the 808s show recently.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. That was just like, I went with a group of my friends and we were like, if that was a cult, I'm joined. Like, it was just like the whole top to bottom. It was so epically beautiful. And, you know, similar to like reflecting back on like the, you know, the Glow in the Dark tour, there was, it was a performance piece, right? So there was like a plot from, there was a whole like storyline throughout. And it was gorgeous and so great. And the Hollywood Bowl here in LA is just like an epic, like epically classic and so beautiful venue. So to see him there was just like so great. And of course, everyone that went, that goes to the 808 show, is just like the most hardcore like Kanye fan ever. So that's always fun when you found like folks. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember, I think it was talking with Joe Perez, who is the lead art designer or art director for Donda for 6 years and curated Kanye's blog. And he was talking, I think it was him, was talking about how Kanye didn't really get to do the 808s concert that Kanye had wanted to do, which is why the Hollywood Bowl show is such a, like a thing that he had been wanting to do.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, because 808s was like a commercial flop. So I think that's what also what's really interesting and what I love. One of the things I've like, I always tell people, because sometimes like being like a Kanye enthusiast is, you know, not everyone is. Some people have really strong opinions like the opposite way. And I really truly believe that like, I'm like, future generations will be jealous that you lived in this era that where he was releasing music, because like on the broader landscape of hip hop, it has, it's so like, looking back, you can see the impact that his albums have made, and they were really genre defying. And you can see kind of, especially with 808s to Yeezus, those ones are really clearly like, at the time when they came out, there were really, nothing sounded like it. And then, but everything followed it, right? It's like Yeezus, everything we hear, I think, kind of on the radio right now or on, in like kind of the younger hip hop scene of, I mean, even like Travis Scott, I would say, is really heavily Yeezus influenced. And what, that's been like 5 years since it came out and people hate it.
Yeah.
I love it. I think, yeah, it's, I really think it's one of my favorites. It's my favorite, which, yeah, I get in arguments with my friends on what is the best. And I think I'm a strong Yeezus fan. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Yeah, we go, Travis and I go back and forth all the time on Yeezus and Life of Pablo.
Yeah, I love Life of Pablo. But that Yeezus sound, that really hard, like, distortion and, like, oh, God. And he and, you know, I'm a, like, huge, I mentioned I was, like, really in the electronic music scene, and he sampled this group Tonight. Do you know them? So it's Lunas, and who's really awesome. If you're not familiar with Lunas, L-U-N-I-C-E. What was Tonight? It was a group with him. I can't remember. Oh, Hudson Mohawk. So Hudmo and Lunas.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Their duo together, they made, was this group called Tonight. So it's Tonight without any vowels. And they did like one brief EP that is like one of the best. And Kanye sampled that. Like, well, I guess he was working with Hudson Mohawk and for that album. And that's just like one of my favorite like electronic music beats. And it goes so hard. It's so cool. It was like his crossover with that, with the electronic music scene in the more recent albums has been really rad. Like working with, like Samo, Soundboy, and God, I'm blanking on their names now too. Jerome LOL. That stuff is huge for people in that genre. It's like really incredible. I'm kind of like loosely like no friends of friends, and that stuff, just those stories of just like, oh yeah, like Kanye called me up and wanted me to do a track for him. It's just like, like there's just nothing compares. Yeah. Pretty insane.
Could you imagine getting that phone call?
Yeah. Like it's just, it's so, I think it's really like a testament to, his commitment to being innovative and forward thinking and really open to that kind of collaboration and bringing in different types of sounds and really like bringing like kind of no, like really not nobodies, but, yeah, like underground, I guess. Yeah.
The diamonds in the rough.
Genre. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's really, really, it's wild. Yeah.
That's one of the absurd things about his discography. Like, I feel like you could go and pick up, you know, a Shinedown album and be like, oh yeah, this sounds like this other Shinedown album. where you pick up a Kanye West album. You're just like, this is Kanye West. Like, anybody that picked up The College Dropout and then listened to The Life of Pablo would be like, this is the same guy.
Yeah. And he's really evolving. Even like, watch, you know, and Watch the Throne. Yeah, it's so good. And it means what all the his discography, like, just means so much for the broader hip hop genre and pop music, really, too. It has like a huge impact. And I think, like, as we look back too, like, we could really, really connect the dots easily. It's hard when you're living in the moment of it, which, again, why we're so lucky to like live through it. So, yeah.
I've had that same thought a lot, especially in the last 2 years, of just like, holy shit, like, we get to be alive in the time that like Kanye West is in its prime.
Yeah.
Like, that's absurd.
I know. Gosh, I love that. I'm like, God, we're such nerds. And then there's so many people would hear this and be like, oh, you guys are so lame. But no, totally. I really agree. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, like, people that were living with the Beatles, do they understand that this music would be around for so long and continue to like have new fans for generations past? And I think that we can like easily say that Kanye will be one of those. Yeah. And what's really wild too is we're living now in the era where some of the like biggest, you know, artists of like this generation. I mean, I'm like, I am a huge Chance the Rapper fan. Like, it's Kanye and like Chance is like right underneath that for me. And he is just like so heavily influenced and like his career is really, like, he attributes it so much to Kanye. So I think that's really, really special. And we can't, like, you may not be a Kanye fan, but if you're a Chance the Rapper fan, like, you are, you know, kind
of thing. Yeah. What is it, the transitive property?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Some random, a bit of an aside, 14 minutes ago, Kanye tweeted, my album is 7 songs. And then 12 minutes ago, tweeted, June 1st.
Oh, no.
And then 6 minutes ago, tweeted, me and Cudi album, June 8th. And then 4 minutes ago said, it's called Kids See Ghost. That's the name of our group.
Wow. Amazing. I'm like loving this like Kanye return to Twitter and like just these stream of consciousness things that he's going on right now. I'm like absolutely loving it. This is incredible. But I think we kind of knew something was coming because of that whole like he was in Minnesota or like
Wyoming.
Yeah. And all those rumors. I mean, yeah, I like follow all the Team Kanye Daily and all the things and yeah, follow it all. So, I feel like it's kind of expected, but this is great.
Yeah, it's nice to just have another date because we were sitting there just like wondering and wondering with Pablo, right?
Yeah. Oh God, Pablo. The Pablo release was so. That's another like wild thing now that we're in this the switch over to like streaming, right? And now that there's not like physical releases of albums the same way that they used to be. That this like, you know, we can be waiting for so long and things like rapidly change, you know, what was it when he's like, I'm going to fix Wolves.
Yeah.
Like that's like so wild. And I remember when Pablo was coming out. Yeah. And he's like, it's not quite ready. It'll be out tomorrow. Like release dates are so blurry or they're like unexpected. And yeah, actually like was just, I spent, well, obviously I think a lot of people did like spent the weekend thinking about Beyonce, after her Coachella performance.
Yeah.
And, was with the friends and we were just like, I don't know. I was thinking about her and how like that, the digital drop and like that, how she's been really, you know, on the other flip side, she's kind of changed the way that music is released and the way that we consume it in similar ways that kind of relate. It's really cool. Yeah.
I think that Beyonce release really inspired Kanye with Pablo.
Yeah. The digital, her first, well, she did the, there was Lemonade, which was one. Lemonade was incredible, but then the digital drop where the midnight, like around Christmas, and it was all music videos. Like that was, yeah, it's always so impressive how much she can get done secretly.
Yeah, yeah. Right. You think yeah. In this day and age, everything leaks, everybody knows, but to still have projects like that where you're just like, oh fuck.
Like, yeah.
We didn't know.
Yeah, it's. I mean, she's got some good lawyers. There's some good paperwork going on, which should be expected. But yeah, like, I even just love that. I mean, what do you think of like, this is my book thing?
Yeah.
I was like, all right, like this is a book. Yeah, let's do it.
Kanye is so into the idea of. Like the walls that we create around concepts are malleable, right? Like you don't,
yeah.
You're not just a musician. You're not just a rapper. You're not just a musician. You're not just a fashion person. Like a book isn't just a book. Like just because we say that a book takes place in these pages and is something you hold, like that's not really true anymore with ebooks and digital books. So
yeah,
I think it's fascinating that he's just looking at the fact like I'm writing a book, I'm putting it on Twitter. You may not think it's a book, but like, what's our concept of a book? Like now this is a book.
I totally love it. It just also reflects back to like, we're in this new era too, where like, you just don't like the SoundCloud rapper era. Like you don't need, I mean, like, even he talks about, like, how hip-hop just in general, like, you just didn't, it increased access to people being able to create music, because before you needed, like, musical instruments, and then all of a sudden you don't need musical instruments to make music, and, like, now, like, you just don't even need, you don't need a record label, you don't need, like, radio airplay, like, any of those things to be, you know, have a fan base and connect with folks and get your music out. Like the those barriers keep reducing. And we need people to, and you know, I feel like that's him embracing this in some concept, in some way, like, yeah, you can write a book on Twitter. I mean, I think like, yeah, people have a huge influence on Twitter as well. Like we're also in that era. So he's harnessing that. I mean, there's a lot of people that write things on Twitter that have a way broader impact and landscape than people that write books. I mean, hey, I come from like, this is my like constant battle. I write peer-reviewed manuscripts that take like five. I mean, like that's a long, like, but it, at least in like the publishing process, it takes from when I submit it. So not including the time that I'm writing it, or collecting the data or whatever, like any of that, from submission to it's in print is 2 years.
Jeez. Yeah.
And like not a lot changes. And then once it's in print, like you have to have, that doesn't mean everyone can access it, you know, like they're paid, you have to pay to read them. So it's like really, and that's a problem. Like, and we talk about that a lot in my field, and something I really talk about of like, dissemination of information and the barriers that we have towards around that. So yeah, I mean, that's something our field is always talking about, like how do we use Twitter and new media to get things out in a meaningful way. So yeah, maybe I'll write a book on Twitter.
that's an interesting thought to me, because you do have the peer review papers and very like helpful and necessary information that goes on to be a lot of the foundation for, you know, social studies, science study, like very academic things. And how do you turn that into mass appeal? Especially you look at magazines that have that pseudoscience aspect, right?
Yeah, totally.
That kind of bastardize things. Like, is there a way to make this information, consumable in the mainstream?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's something like we're always trying to wrap our heads around. And I think, you know, that like with the peer review process, there's obviously like benefits that there's a reason why we like peer review. Right. And because it gives it, you know, it does, It validates the science, and they're, well, I don't get paid, you know, no one makes any money off a publication. Like, it's, and, what's interesting too is, yeah, like, I mean, we're leaning more towards like doing infographics and blogs, but it's really hard. And we're, as academics and scientists, you're not really measured by your, it, like, we're not encouraged to do those things, and our metrics of success aren't measured in blog posts or, yeah, like press mentions, right? They probably should, but so we're like, the field is encouraged to chase other ways of getting their information, because that's what's like ultimately they're going to be measured on. I don't know. It's a big, yeah, it's a conflicting. It's tough for me.
Which I think that becomes interesting then, to see that for you in this professional world, being a Kanye fan isn't just this kind of outside thing that doesn't have any impact on the perspective or the way that you kind of view your role. It's the fact that watching how Kanye is doing things can have an impact on, it's like, how are we in this industry going to proliferate information?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think as in my profession, I'm probably a little bit more like non-traditional compared to others. And, you know, I just received my PhD. Like, I'm like very fresh, and like, I like to think of part of like the next generation of science, social scientists and researchers. So, you know, I definitely look at Kanye and the way that things are, the way that he does. And I do think that this motivation to push things forward and be innovative and like, I love his quotes of like, my favorite quote is like, when he said living your life, something about like caring about public opinion is equivalent to spending the rest of your life in traffic. I think that really resonates with me too, as being an Angeleno. Like, I'm like, yeah, like traffic's the worst. Like, can you imagine spending the rest of your life in traffic? And this concept of like, just don't, you can't like care about, if you spend your time caring about what other people think and measuring yourself upon what other people think are important rather than what you think is really important, then it's just not, life isn't really worth living. And I fully like subscribe to that. And I try to use, you know, a lot of my professional, I think, influences and the people that I want to, you know, model my professional life against are, you know, is Kanye West and like Kathleen Hanna. And like, they're just kind of people that are more like radical and just don't care what others think. I use them as touchstones of like, what am I doing right now? And does it align with those, like, do I really care about it, or do others really care about it? Or, you know, am I changing what I would be doing because of what other people might think? Yeah. Versus what I think is right or what I want to do. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, yeah. I'm excited for where your career goes and how these influences can, I don't know, what they cause you to do. We always need innovators in every field.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I think like Kanye tweeted that yesterday. I think that's in the book.
Right. That's just going to be how I conduct these interviews from now on, is that I just quote Kanye tweets to the guests.
It's so great. And I've just been like, oh man. And I also just like been looking at the shoes all day today. Like, do I really need this $300 pair of sneakers? Oh.
Do you have a lot of merch from the concerts?
I have, my favorite thing is like the $5 t-shirt, the like knockoff. I mean, sorry, Kanye, like I love the parking lot t-shirts. They're so funny. And I like to collect them. So I do have a few. And then I have like my feezies, my fake Yeezys that I got off some China website. It's really like, well, that's really embarrassing. Yeah, but kind of not.
Yeah. The first time I saw Yeezys in public, I was at this place in Austin called Pite House Pizza. Uh-huh. And I'm just staring at this guy's feet while we're in line to order. And he kind of looks at me, and I was just like, Yeezys. Like a simpleton. Not like a person like that has social like knowledge of how to interact with people. Instead of being like, oh, hey, I really like your shoes. It was just Yeezys. Like drool coming from the corner of my mouth.
I feel like when they first came out, there was like some like if you like I would wear my Yeezys out and they were really good ones, so it was hard for people to tell. But like there'd be like a nod like to another person in a pair of like Yeezys, and you're like, yeah, this we know. But I always too would get like the people that would compliment them too were like middle-aged women. They were like a nurse. Like she was like, oh, those are cool shoes. And I'm like, yeah, like moms and middle-aged women loved my black on black Yeezys. I don't know. They just like, I don't know, look slip resistant or whatever. It's funny.
Something about those shoes gives me security and comfort.
Yeah, that's exactly what would happen. It was great. Yeah. Love that.
You're going to have to send us some pictures of these parking lot t-shirts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I got some good one. Well, yeah, I have a really good $5, like, just Life of Pablo t-shirt. It was just better than anything that he was selling, I mean, there. I mean, he was selling good things, but this is $5 t-shirt. It's great. Yeah.
You can't beat a $5. Some of my favorite t-shirts are the ones that my fiance gets for free, and I'm just like, yeah, I'll wear a shirt for whatever like software company this is. This is my favorite shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, getting back to concerts real fast, if you were to rank your concert experiences, what would the ranking be?
Yeah, okay, cool. Gosh, that's so tough. I really think the 808s one is high. It's probably it's really hard to think of between 808s, The Life of Pablo, and that Fader concert. But let's do 808s as the top, and then the Life of Pablo is just, it was so good, you know. That stage was pretty incredible. And then yeah, the Fader one.
Yeah, that Fader one's just such a weird and unique.
Yeah, it was really unique. Yeah, so it would be number one just because it like was such a once in a lifetime type of thing. But yeah, that 808s was really also unique too. And yeah,
there's something about like an album being out for a while and then having a concert like. That was almost a decade later that the Hollywood Bowl happened.
Yeah.
And just to have that kind of relationship with an album and to then go see a like one weekend production of a concert designed specifically for that album is pretty crazy.
Crazy. Yeah, it was. Yeah, we had the greatest time. Like everyone was just like loving every moment of it. And like, yeah, to see it, these also just like the album play out, you know, like you knew what song was coming next. Like it just like that type of feeling was also really cool. Like it was very familiar, but also very, everything was also new and surprising. Yeah.
Damn. It's just making me want to go rewatch. I watched it again like a month ago, and now I just want to go back and rewatch it.
Oh yeah, it was so good.
Well, what a top three albums. You mentioned Yeezus. What are the other two favorite albums?
You know, I used to be, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is, I thought that was so perfect when it came out. It was just, at the time I really, really, really was obsessed with it. And I thought it was so, I don't know, just like it had such a trajectory as well. And obviously I've listened to the Dissect podcast, and he did a fantastic job breaking it all down. It was really great to re-listen to that. But I think Yeezus and Life of Pablo are up there. I mean, Ultralight Beam is just one of my favorites. So it's hard not to pick Life of Pablo. So Yeezus, Life of Pablo, and then I think 808s. Yeah.
808s, I think, is gaining a lot of steam for me too recently. There's just something, and I still love and adore My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And similar to you, when it came out, it just seemed like it was going to be the end all be all of albums for me. Yeah. But over the last few years, just the soundscape of those other three albums and the emotion behind them really just comes off in a unique way.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things too that we like, you know, mainstream hip hop too. It's really, there was a period of time too when it's like, let's get all these like these superstar producers in the room. We're going to get all of our like huge names in the room and make these like epic songs that are really like big and I don't know. Yeah, ready for radio and all that stuff. And My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy has a lot of that to me, and it's done perfectly. But then, 808s and Yeezus are like not that. You know, it's really that raw emotion and stripped down, and it's not like I'm gonna call Jay-Z and be on this, you know, type of thing. It's much more of like an artistic. You can feel the artistic process behind it. Same with Life of Pablo. Yeah.
Very much so. Very much so. Well, top five favorite Kanye tracks?
Yeah. Well, okay. So, yeah, when I was writing my dissertation recently, I was like, okay, everything is crazy and out of control. So I decided I made like a game with myself to only listen to Kanye for the 30 days leading up to when I was finishing. and so that included like his production stuff and I was like, can I do this? And I did. and I really got deep into thinking about this stuff. So right now, currently, my favorite song is Touch the Sky. And it's just so good. Like, if you go back to that song, it is so good. And I said I love the sample. I love, like, I just love the upbeatness of it. I really love that video. And I think everyone should go back and watch that video. Tracee Ellis Ross is incredible in it. I can quote her whole like breakdown in that video. It's so good. So I love that one. And I love like going back to those songs and kind of just like getting into like, oh yeah, it's so fun. And the Curtis Mayfield sample is just like so great. I have to admit that I have that All Day album cover artwork like tattooed on me. So yeah. All Day is just one of my favorite tracks, period. That was a huge game changer for me. I watched that, his live performance at the BBC Music Awards, like pretty frequently. It was so good with
the flamethrowers.
Yeah, the flamethrowers. Oh my God. That was so good. I love that song. But I also got the tattoo too, cause he has he has a matching one. you know, we were talking about like, I think Runaway is just obviously fantastic.
Yeah.
And what do I love on Yeezus? I mean, what is my favorite Yeezus track? I think just New Slaves. I just like think of the whole thing as one piece. I think Bound 2 is great, but okay. I really like 4 or 5 Seconds. Like a lot. Ooh. And Only One, like his more stripped down singing tracks that I'm picking ones that aren't on albums too, which is really interesting. Kind of his one-offs. And I think Ultralight Beam, I have to give Ultralight Beam to be in my top because I love Chance the Rapper's verse so much. Like
that pillar of salt line.
Yeah, he's just, I love it so much. And he's my number, pretty much my number two. Yeah.
You must have been so happy the first time you heard that.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, yeah. I still listen to that song like once a week. Yeah.
Wow. Were you at the theater?
Wait, what? When?
The Yeezy season 3.
No, I wasn't. No, I watched it for mom. I did when Yeezus was coming out. He was doing those like weird pop-up like of things. And we went and saw like the American Psycho like film like projected on the side of some building. It was really weird. Yeah. But try to go to those things, but it gets a little crazy. There was a rumor he was recently during All-Star Week. I think he popped into something downtown here and did a little live show.
Oh man. That'd be awesome to live in a place where that was a potential thing to happen.
Yeah, I know. My friend like used to work in the same building at his office in Calabasas. He's like, yeah, easy. Like I share an elevator with like the Yeezus office. I'm like, that's so wild. I also just like Kanye doing like normal things, you know, like shopping in Calabasas. It's like the best.
Yeah. Just like, there he is. There he is. We really want to get to a point. One of our like Patreon goals is to get this amount of money a month to rent a billboard in Calabasas where we just get to like send Kanye little nice messages.
Oh God. I love it.
That'd be so much fun.
It would be really fun.
Kanye, really like the hair color.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
Looking great. I like his new, like the new tattoo ideas. I was like, they look great. Yeah.
Yeah.
The same was. Yeah.
Do it. I think we're at the time for your last call. So cool. You get an uninterrupted period of time to say whatever final thoughts you want on Kanye or the world or life or whatever you want to talk about.
Oh man, I should have been more prepared for this last call. I knew it was coming. You know, I think continuing to just really revel in this fact and like remind ourselves like how lucky we are to live in this Kanye era generation, or the generation of that exists with Kanye. And I am so excited to see what like how North and Saint and I guess Chicago now grow up and see kind of their contributions to the world in the future. I think that's gonna be really, really cool. But yeah, and looking forward to this new album that's coming out June 9th, you said? June soon? Yeah.